I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. There is excitement in the space community over NASA's recent success with its Mars rover, Curiosity. The mission launched from the Space Coast, and NASA is in the middle of reshaping itself in the post-shuttle era. So what does NASA 2.0 mean for Florida? We put that question to two space policy experts and also ask, how does election year politics figure into future space plans? That conversation ahead on Intersection.
Entry, descent, and landing, also known as EDL, is referred to as the 7 minutes of terror, because we've got literally 7 minutes to get from the top of the atmosphere to the surface of Mars, going from 13,000 miles an hour to zero, in perfect sequence, perfect choreography, perfect timing, and the computer has to do it all by itself with no help from the ground. If any one thing doesn't work just right, it's game over.
That's Curiosity rover engineer Tom Rivellini speaking on NASA video 7 Minutes of Terror. It's an online feature that NASA produced, and it went viral across the internet as the Curiosity rover landed on Mars after an unbelievably complicated landing sequence. The SUV-sized Curiosity is the United States' seventh craft to land successfully on the Red Planet, and by far the largest, most sophisticated, and the rover's journey started on Florida's Space Coast, where it was launched 9 months ago. It's been a big success for NASA more than a year after the space agency retired the shuttle program, eliminating thousands of jobs on the Space Coast and leaving American astronauts depending on rides into space on Russia. But this new feeling of excitement in the space community is rising. Big things are starting to take shape on the Space Coast. Commercial crew, more missions of various types, and for more perspective on the impact of Curiosity's success, I'm joined by longtime space policy expert Dale Ketchum, who directs the Spaceport Research and Technology Institute at the University of Central Florida. Dale, great to have you back.
Glad to be here, Mark.
Also joined in the studio by Josh Caldwell, who is deputy director of the Florida Space Institute at the University of Central Florida and professor of planetary sciences. Great to have you in.
Thank you for having me.
So Curiosity launched from the Space Coast, but its mission control is in Pasadena, California. Its success is making NASA cool again in the public spotlight. It's reignited excitement for the space agency. So, Dale Ketchum, how important is the success of Curiosity for Florida and the Space Coast in particular?
Well, I think in large part, anything that brings the level of goodwill and a sense of accomplishment that we like to associate with NASA and helps to re-energize that, that's good for everybody associated with the agency, and clearly Florida feels as though it's a major stakeholder in NASA. So just the sheer success, being associated with success, is a good thing almost in any definition.
And it doesn't seem to matter that it was unmanned.
No, actually, NASA has a long history of success with unmanned activity. There's sort of two branches of NASA, the manned and the unmanned, and I think there's an inclination to make it a competition, and it's not. It's a joint exercise. It's all a part of our exploration.
Josh Caldwell, give us a little bit of insight as to why this mission back to Mars is important.
Well, it's important on a number of levels. As Dale mentioned, it's a very important mission for NASA. It's what NASA calls a flagship mission. As you alluded to, the manned and the unmanned portions of NASA, the unmanned science side of NASA is $5.4 billion. It's a large amount of money that Central Florida is aiming to take a bigger role in participating in. This particular mission, obviously there was a lot riding on it. It's a large budget mission. It's the first flagship that NASA has launched in more than a decade. Going back to Mars with a very capable science laboratory enables us to do a lot of basic scientific investigations, and we're studying one of the most fundamental questions, in my view, which is there life elsewhere in our solar system?
You know, what do you think also about the visual perception of NASA? You know, coming out of the 60s, it was guys with slide rules and making big calculations. And for so long, astronauts have been the face of the space program. But, of course, the astronauts themselves, those initial guys, they're all fighter pilots, right? The right stuff, that type of image, and then gradually transitioned more into science as we got into the shuttle era. Now with Curiosity, we're seeing the success of, you know, Bobak Ferdowsi, who is known as the Mohawk guy. He's on the late shows, and NASA engineers are now cool. What does that do for the space agency?
Well, to me, it's very important, and I think it helps move the agency in the right direction. And in many ways, I saw the signs of that a couple of years ago after the first successful Falcon 9 launch for SpaceX from the KSC, because we were able. I was at the launch party for SpaceX, which was a great deal of fun because it was a whole bunch of young people. I mean, the median age was, you know, mid to low 20s. There was a few graybeards in there, but it was rowdy. It was fun. Some billionaire was picking up the bar tab. It was a lot of fun. But it reminded me, having grown up in Cocoa Beach back during before NASA was created, it reminded me very much of the early Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo parties where you had young people achieving great things. And it's so much different now than, you know, looking at mission control and the old shuttle program successes where there was a lot of graybeards involved. And I think it's a symbol of NASA getting back to what we want it to be, which is doing what hasn't been done before. And that needs a certain element of youth.
Pushing forward, breaking down barriers, that sort of thing. Well, historically, Florida has received a small share of NASA money for research and exploration, which is what Curiosity is doing. And it was hard to lobby in the state for that extra money because Florida already getting so much funding for the shuttle program. Of course, that's now over. So is Florida lobbying for more research and exploration money now? Does that become easier because of Curiosity, Dale Ketchum?
I think it puts us in a much better position to make a political argument that if evaluating on the merits, because in the past we were receiving such a large chunk of the space operations budget through shuttle employing 15,000 people, you would not receive a favorable argument going in and talking to the legislators from, Senator Mikulski from Maryland, who chairs the Appropriations Committee, or others, because we were getting such a big pie, a big piece of one pie, and it is a zero-sum game. But thanks to the effort of Josh and people around the state and the commitment of the state, I think we're in a better position to succeed on merit.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. We're talking about NASA 2.0, essentially a reboot in the space agency, the directions that it is taking. Dale Ketchum, longtime space policy expert at the University of Central Florida, also joined by Josh Caldwell, who is deputy director of the Florida Space Institute at UCF and professor of planetary sciences. Tell us what you think about what's happening with NASA, the Curiosity landing. Did you watch it? Are you still following it online? Let us know, Facebook and Twitter, or email intersection@wmfe.org. Well, Josh Caldwell, tell us a little bit about how the game is changing in terms of what people might be perceiving, both in Congress and at the state level, for what Kennedy can be doing in the space agency, NASA in general.
Well, science drives a lot of what NASA does, and particularly on the unmanned side of things, all the economic activity that follows from that, including the launches, the launch of Curiosity and other planetary probes, is ultimately driven by the initial science investigations. And so what we've been seeing the last few years is a growing activity here in Central Florida at UCF and at KSC and other universities around, and getting more involved in that science activity, competing for large science investigations, which brings money in, which drives the development of payloads and activities, and gets us involved in all aspects of the game and not just the launch at the end.
From where you sit, do you see that there is a blueprint, a big picture plan for where NASA should be going, or is it still small missions each doing their own individual thing but not fully coordinated in a grand picture?
Well, there is a blueprint, and the current administration has laid out a vision for the space program, and it has two components, as a manned and an unmanned side. And the unmanned blueprint is very clear. There's a decadal survey that was just released last year for planetary exploration The Mars missions are part of that. There are plans for missions to asteroids and other small bodies in the solar system. On the man side, we're in a little bit of a period of feeling our way because we're still working on getting a new launch vehicle. We will be going back with humans to explore either the moon or asteroids, other objects in the inner solar system. So there's a blueprint out there. We are obviously in a transition period, though, with the end of shuttle.
Let's talk about that transition period a little bit. Of course, efforts to turn Cape Canaveral into a spaceport for commercial space companies are ongoing. NASA recently announced that three commercial companies with ties to the Space Coast will receive together $1 billion to build space taxis that will go up to the International Space Station. Those companies, Boeing, SpaceX, Sierra Nevada. How do those fit into efforts like the Curiosity lander? You know, is there any overlap there in what you gain?
Well, what that does is it frees NASA up to do fundamental exploration and science and gets NASA out of the business of basically being a taxi service to the space station. And so having three companies involved in developing a new manned lift capability to space station has a lot of advantages. For one thing, if one of them has a problem, a technical problem for whatever reason, you've got another option potentially to go to. And after each shuttle tragedy, we were grounded for several years. Also, it's more cost-effective to have those companies doing that part of the manned program, which allows NASA to invest in new technology and science exploration.
Explain a little bit how this is different, because the strategy of having multiple service providers for space launches, it's a strategic move on both the manned and unmanned fronts, a signal maybe that the old way of a single government providing service no longer works. But still, when that was the case, there were private companies that were supplying the services and the equipment and that sort of thing. So how is it different?
It's different on the managerial level. So NASA is turning over, as a contractor, a lot more of the responsibility of developing the vehicle and letting them handle a lot more of the issues on their own internally, and then just dealing with the interface with NASA at a higher level. I don't know if, Dale, you've got any comments on the different – because you're right. We've been doing commercial launch vehicles. I mean, it's companies that built the space shuttle, but they built it under day-to-day oversight by NASA, whereas now what NASA is doing is saying – here's the capability we're looking for. You companies go out, develop that capability, and show us that you've got it, and then we'll certify that it's actually safe and reliable and meets our specifications, but they're staying out of the day-to-day operation, and that's led to greater efficiency.
So, Dale Ketchum, what's the impact of that strategy shift?
Well, I think it's, again, gets back to the comment I made earlier about the change in NASA. Before, when we had the original push by NASA to go to the moon, the directive from President Kennedy, as we went through Mercury and Gemini and Apollo, that was to go out and do which had never been done before. And then as we managed to find ourselves in the shuttle program, that was, as Josh said, the agency became not somebody doing something that had never been done before. It became an agency managing a taxi service for 30 years. And that was doing operations, just regular day-to-day, although you didn't use the word routine because it was still very dangerous. But what we have now is it's turning over to the private sector, that which makes sense, because getting to low Earth orbit, it's still hard. It's still dangerous. But we've been doing it for 50 years. The Russians have been doing it longer than that. It's appropriate to turn that over to the private sector and allow them to use the efficiencies and the innovative capabilities that the private sector has, and then free NASA up to do what we and the rest of the world expect NASA to do, which is what hasn't been done before. And I think that reinvigorates the entire agency, and I think that's very much a fundamental component of what the administration was trying to bring.
So bottom line, Dale Ketchum, as these things are transforming both unmanned and manned on the Space Coast, are they creating the level of jobs that people are hoping are going to replace those vanished shuttle workers? Up to 9,000 jobs were lost.
Well, I think it was understood all along that we were not going to get any program that was going to replace 9,000 jobs, nor did, quite frankly, we want that, because one of the problems that we're dealing with is we were a community that was wedded to one big, fat government program. And when I went to college, my dad paid my way to go to University of Florida right at the time that Nixon canceled the Apollo program, and we laid off tens of thousands of people. It was a devastating economic hit because we were all wedded to one program. And then now, last year, my son went to Gainesville for the first time, and we're going through the same crisis. And our goal is to get to where we are not simply wedded to one big government program, but we're diversified. We have a lot more activity, both in terms of commercial activity with multiple providers, trying to develop an economy that also focuses on what Josh does, where we're at all ends of the food chain for NASA production to diversify the economy away. But also, I think that leads us to a more robust, eclectic economy, and they will feed off of one another, because although the shuttle program was great, it was extremely expensive. That's why they killed it. And, you know, we really bore the brunt of one program dying. So I think the community starting to feel that they understand the light at the end of the tunnel. If we can make commercial work the way we think we can, that starts getting synergies of more suppliers and vendors coming here, and you really get to economics 101, which has kind of been the holy grail for Florida now for a couple of decades.
Josh Caldwell, what's coming up in terms of research and little projects? What else is out there that we don't know about?
Well, one of the interesting things that's going on that ties in with the commercial lift to space station is the suborbital commercial industry. So you've probably heard about Spaceship Two and Richard Branson's company,
Virgin Galactic,
and flying passengers, tourists, essentially, into space. But there's a research market for that as well. Those vehicles, those launches are a lot cheaper than the traditional suborbital sounding rockets. And we've got a center for microgravity research at UCF that's developing payloads. We're planning on flying those payloads on a number of those different vehicles. So that's a very exciting new thing that's been enabled, sort of a new kind of garage innovator area of space flight that kind of mirrors the Silicon Valley innovations of the 70s that's going on right now in suborbital rocketry. And that's just one of many examples.
And does it make a lot more sense to have it centralized all on the Space Coast, launch and research right in the same area? That's got to be logistically much easier.
Certainly for these suborbital things, because there you're talking about really rapid turnaround. We develop a payload. If we can just drive it 40 miles over to the coast and put it on the rocket, Mast and Space Systems is going to be launching things from Kennedy. That's obviously greatly more efficient and cheaper than taking it to some other location.
Quick break, then more Intersection on the other side. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Mark Simpson. Did you know you can hear Intersection 3 days a week, Tuesday morning at 9:30, Wednesday evening at 6:30, and Saturday mornings at 7:30? You can also find previous episodes online at wmfe.org/intersection. Each week, Intersection also posts a podcast available at our website. You can also find more discussions about the topics you enjoy on the Florida Talks blog, where stations from around the state are posting on issues in Florida. Find it at wmfe.org/intersection. You're listening to Intersection. I'm Mark Simpson. My guests are Dale Ketchum, space policy expert and director of the Spaceport Research and Technology Institute at the University of Central Florida, also joined by Josh Caldwell, who is deputy director of the Florida Space Institute at the University of Central Florida and professor of planetary sciences. Well, let's get into a little bit of politics. The Republican National Convention rolling into Tampa next week. And Dale Ketchum, you've been getting calls all along from campaigns to help get answers on space policy. Of course, between Tampa and the Space Coast, you've got the anchor of that all-important I-4 corridor, swing part of the swing state of Florida. So is there a clear direction from the Romney camp as we get ready for the RNC regarding space policy?
Not really. Now, clearly, they have time to develop that, because the only thing that matters is what's your position when the polls open, I guess 2 weeks before the election. But so far, we've had traditionally the format has been the EDC of Brevard County hosts roundtables with industry for candidates. We did it with Romney and Giuliani and McCain in 4 years ago, and had offered it to Obama. We had the Obama campaign people come over and do it with us. Then we also did it for senatorial candidates, gubernatorial candidates, congressional candidates. So the template is in place. Just last week we did, or 2 weeks ago, we hosted the Obama campaign people from Tampa, as well as the former chief of staff of the Office of Science and Technology Policy, who was responsible for the administration's decisions to go commercial, cancel Constellation, and keep the International Space Station alive. So at this point, there's a little bit of anxiety that we don't know yet with clarity what the Romney campaign wants to do. His only commitment so far was to form a blue ribbon committee and study the issue. And that really doesn't resonate with the voters here, because the last thing we need is to change direction in 2 or 3 years. So, but they have time to come up with a plan. We're just trying to poke them along to please do so.
And how likely do you think it could be that if there was a Romney victory in November, a complete shift in space strategy? Is that likely?
Well, it's hard to say. That's sort of why we want clarity, because in addition to one, it's not a partisan issue. We would ideally, and we're pretty straightforward with everybody about this, our goal is to get the Romney campaign to come forward and try to best what the president has to offer, and then go back to the White House and say, hey, you know, they beat your offer. Can you match that? And to get, you know, get both sides competing over our issue. That's really our goal. We're straightforward about it. Our concern right now is the Romney campaign, not surprisingly, is focused on deficit reduction. So not having clarity about what they want to do with NASA in an environment of deficit reduction raises the anxiety level of voters for whom that issue is important.
Now, in terms of Obama, he's come out to the Space Coast a couple of times. And I remember right when the shuttle program getting ready to retire made some announcements about funding for a job retraining that was supposed to come through. And some of that money didn't end up coming as readily as people on the Space Coast had hoped. But of course, as you mentioned, we've seen ISS continuation. We've seen commercial spaceflight shift, goals of asteroids and Mars. Are you pleased with the direction being struck out of the White House right now?
Well, I think for the most part, the president has been on the ropes on this issue, because he was in charge when the shuttle was retired and all the layoffs came, and whoever is incumbent when it hits, you take the blame. But also, additionally, he canceled Constellation. I think many of us understood why he did that, but that was only going to employ 2,000 people out of the 9,000 unemployed. But the political problem is you have those 9,000 people, every one of them is convinced they were going to be one of those 2,000.
And of course, we should say, for people who might not remember, Constellation was the space vision launched under George W. Bush.
Correct. And that had run into, as is wont to happen with federal programs, had started scheduling slipping very far to the right, going way over budget, and technical performance was eroding. And essentially what we did was we had both McCain and Obama came to the Space Coast promising to save us. And we assumed they didn't really know what they were talking about, because there really wasn't a way. There was no path forward that didn't result in thousands of jobs lost.
So, Josh Caldwell, given that we've got a presidential election looming, does that bring an air of uncertainty, concerns that there could be a radical shift in funding or direction for the various projects that you're involved with?
Well, the irony is that the president's plan is a very traditionally Republican plan. It canceled a large, over-budget, behind-schedule government launch program and replaced it with private enterprise, which is on track to get Americans back into space on American launch vehicles faster and more cheaply than they would have on Constellation. So it's ironic that there's the potential that things would change with a shift in the administration, but I suppose that's there. On the unmanned side of things, planetary exploration seems to have strong support in Congress, bipartisan. Obviously, with concerns about the deficit, any spending is at risk, but the NASA budget's a very small sliver of the overall discretionary spending So we're hopeful.
But still, there's a lot of contentious debate. I remember seeing as Senator Bill Nelson was debating what we should be doing in terms of this heavy lift rocket concept. There was some big heated conversations about where that program should be built from. Should Florida still play a major role? And of course, in the space game, money talks. The famous line, no bucks, no Buck Rogers. And that, of course, falls on to Congress. So how do you think elections in Congress might play into the future of space policies?
Well, I'll say one more thing about the sort of jobs and the budget situation. You mentioned 9,000 jobs, and for a high-paying job, these high-tech jobs, that's $1 billion to employ 10,000 people. And you can't change those numbers. You can't cook those numbers in any way. To employ that number of people, you've got to be spending $1 billion on salaries, and that's before you do anything else. So there's not any magic way around the hit that we took with the end of shuttle. And if we're interested in doing more with less, that means that there's some of those jobs aren't going to be coming back. On the congressional side, it's very difficult to predict. We had such a change 2 years ago that made things very unpredictable on issues that should have been much less contentious even than the space program. So I can't offer any prediction.
Dale Ketchum, what do you say when you look at Congress? Can you predict at all, or do you have to go to Casadega?
No, I think to a large extent, NASA's for the most part been an amazingly bipartisan supported issue. It's something around which most Americans believe we need to be doing, and they're not afraid to make the investments in it. We need to do everything we can to keep it from becoming a partisan issue. I think that the challenge that we have is Florida. It's one of the reasons why we really aggressively push the two campaigns for president to compete for our votes is because Florida has a tradition of churning its members of Congress. We don't let them stay there really long. And the downside of that is if you have a member, we're competing against Alabama and Mississippi and places like that where when they elect a senator, they intend to keep him there until he's dead. Because before he dies, he's going to get his hands on a gavel of an appropriations subcommittee, and then he'll be able to direct money to our state. We don't do that. We turn our people over too quickly, and so they never get the gavel, and we don't have the seniority in the right committees that direct money against some of this, as opposed to some of the states we're competing with, Alabama and Mississippi, Texas, things of that nature. So we really have to take advantage of the fact that this is the most important piece of political real estate in the country as far as the Electoral College is concerned. So our job is to pressure the candidates and the campaigns to compete for our votes. Hopefully we'll get more seniority in Congress. That would be a good thing. But we play the cards we're dealt.
Well, I guess that means we'll have to check back in with you guys post-November elections. We've been speaking with Dale Ketchum, space policy expert, director of the Spaceport Research and Technology Institute at the University of Central Florida, also joined by Josh Caldwell, deputy director of the Florida Space Institute at UCF and professor of planetary sciences. Gentlemen, thank you both for your insights.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at the Florida Talks blog. Visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is the assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.